Blog Talk Radio.
Pour yourself a cup of tea, put your feet up, and relax. Show host Randy Fine, narcissistic abuse expert, compassionate counselor for clients worldwide, and author of the groundbreaking new book, Close Encounters of the Worst Kind, invites you into her sanctuary, a place where your emotional, physical, and spiritual well-being are all that matters. Time to Heal is a fundraising single written and performed by Johnny Z for the Amy Winehouse Foundation. For more information, please go to johnnymusic.com, johnnymusic.com. And now, it's time to meet Randy, show host of the podcast enjoyed by fans around the globe, A Fine Time for Healing.
Good morning. Thank you for tuning in to listen to A Fine Time for Healing. This is Randy Fine, your show host. Have you ever, or haven't we all, asked ourselves, what's my life purpose? Why am I here? What is my calling? And for some of us, that's a burning desire that we have searched and searched for. And today, we are going to have an expert tell us the easiest way to find the answer to those questions. Her name is Keisha Galgos. Keisha is a certified master life coach, author, speaker, intuitive consultant, and mojo whisperer. She coaches private clients and groups on life purpose, business, and spirituality. And Keisha lives in Northern California with her family. So today, Keisha is going to be talking about, that's right, your mojo. Let me bring her on so we can get started. Good morning, Keisha.
Good morning, Randy. Thank you for having me.
And thank you so much for being my guest. So, well, when I think of mojo and when most people think of mojo, you know, we think of, you know, the movie. What's his name?
Austin Powers.
Austin Powers. Yes, I just drew a sudden blank. We think of Austin Powers and his mojo, which was very sexual in that movie. But what is it, what is mojo that you refer to?
Yeah. So mojo that I refer to is actually an acronym for your magical, original, joyful offering to the world. It's your spirit. It's your passion. It's your swag and your confidence. It's what you bring to the world. It's how you do the things you do.
Okay. And you call yourself a mojo whisperer. And why is that?
Well, it's interesting, Randy. When I started coaching, I noticed that people were calling me saying, I've lost my mojo. I can't find my mojo. And I asked some of my other coach friends, gosh, do people say those words to you? Because I always really liked that word, mojo. I thought it was a fun word, and I just liked the way that it sounded. And they said, no, actually, no one's saying that to us. So I thought, wow, maybe this is kind of a sign that, because since I love mojo so much, maybe this is actually something that people are actually coming to me for and that it's different. So I started calling myself Mojo Whisper, and it just sort of exploded from there.
And exploded it has.
Yes.
So how do you help people find their mojo?
Well, that's a good question. So one of the first things that I do with people is I just ask them, what do you do when you have time that really excites you, that you lose track of time, that's really, really fun for you? So some people think that whatever it is that they're doing, that other people always do that too. So if you're spending all your time reading about nutrition and making healthy meals and, you know, coming up with all kinds of exciting ways to put things together, a lot of people will say, but doesn't everybody do that? And I say, no, they do not, because I would rather be, you know, I don't want to be caught dead in the kitchen. I'm done with that.
Right.
I don't do that anymore. So it's funny when we talk about the things that we like, it's hard for us to understand that maybe everybody else doesn't love doing that. So we underestimate the things that we love to do. So when I talk with people and I'm asking them, hey, you know, where do you like to spend your time? It's sometimes hard for people to understand that that's something that you love but other people don't, and that might be special. So when you're thinking about the things you enjoy doing and the talent and the way that you do that, that's a really powerful mojo combination.
Okay. So we all assume that what we like, everybody else likes, but that's not necessarily true.
Everyone else is good at it.
Right,
so,
exactly.
So you know, that just because it comes somewhat easily for us, we think that it's no big deal. I just hosted something I call Camp Mojo at my home a couple days ago, and this whole thing just played itself out again, where there were all these people sitting there together, and we were talking about, you know, what makes us special, and so many people can't say what that is. They have no idea. And part of it is because we've been taught to be humble and, you know, to hide our gifts, and which is fine, but then when really called upon to ask, what is it that you do that comes across as special, people really have no idea. And so it was great, because it was really easy for the other participants in the camp to be able to tell someone, this is how you are coming across. This is what seems really special and amazing about you to me. And what was great was everyone could see what was great and amazing about everybody else, but had a little bit of a hard time doing that for themselves, which I think is super common. So one of the things I ask my clients to do is to ask the people around you, people in the circle of trust, you know, how do you see me? How would you describe me to someone else if you were maybe like recommending me for a job, or you were wanting to set me up with your brother? You know, how would you describe me? And what you'll find is it's very interesting how other people are describing you, and that's really what's coming through from you to the world.
Now, intuition plays a big part in all this. How does that work? How does our intuition work?
So our intuition, to me, is the language of your soul. It's that part of you. It's just the part that we're accessing. We're accessing something that is larger than ourselves. It's kind of like what Jung called the collective unconscious. It may come from God or the universe or whatever you perceive. So intuition comes from that field of possibility. It's also a really practical skill where we are gathering all kinds of cues and stashing them away in our back pocket. So sometimes intuition is actually pretty logical. When we've observed patterns for a while, when we've seen little micro expressions on people's faces, and we kind of get a feeling of whether they're telling the truth or not, there's all these things that we don't really realize consciously. But we're actually gathering all this information and toting it away in our back pocket. And then when it comes time to make a decision, we have information, but we don't quite realize that it's actually really good information. It may be like, wow, how did I know that? Or why am I making such a snap judgment? But really, the thing is that we really can trust those feelings, because if you look back over the course of your life, you'll probably notice that there were lots and lots of times that you actually had the right idea about something with very little actual information. And so looking back at those times where you were actually feeling something about someone and thought, oh, you know, how can I really know that? So looking back at your intuition, times that you felt like something wasn't right and it wasn't, Or you had kind of, gosh, I don't know how I could be so excited about this. I don't really know much about it. And then it turned out to be great. So intuition is one of those things that is crucial in finding your mojo, because it's something that comes from a deeper part of us. It's not necessarily logical. And I really believe that you're not going to find your life purpose in your logical brain. Your logical brain is there for all kinds of other stuff. It's there for, you know, executive functioning, paying our bills, being where we need to be on time, and critical thinking, which is all super valuable and fabulous, but not really great for figuring out what is it that I want to do with this precious life of mine. And so getting us to put that logical part to the side a little bit and really focusing on the language of our soul is a really, really great way to get in touch with your intuition.
That's a great explanation, because, you know, I never really thought about it as all the little bits and excuse me, all the little bits and pieces that we accumulate and sort of put in our back pocket. I really never thought about it that way, but that's a really good explanation of it. Because yes, it does come. It's not coming from nowhere. Sometimes it is. Sometimes it's coming from spirit world or whatever.
Uh-huh,
but a lot of it
uh-huh.
is based on our experiences.
It really is. And so we tend to discount it because we think, how could I possibly know that? Or I'm making rash decisions, or I shouldn't be thinking that of someone. And it's actually a gift. It's very much like the instinct of an animal. Animals don't question their instincts. They just move with them. And so I'm sure you and everyone listening has had at least one time where they didn't listen to their intuition and then they regretted it later. And so I just want to focus on that and highlight that you know so much more than you think you do, because you don't have to only receive information from your conscious brain. You're receiving so much information from people's body language, their energy, the way that someone, the tone of their voice, when things are conflicting about what they're saying and doing, you're getting all this information. And so your body really knows how to break that down into feel good or doesn't feel good. And so paying attention to what that physically feels like in your body is a huge, hugely helpful way to start listening to yourself. So the reason you would want to be listening to your intuition is so that you can listen to those deep inner yearnings that you have about what it is that you want to do. Because if you listen to your logical brain, it's like, oh no, you know, you can't do that. You don't have a degree for that, or it'll take too long, or you're too old, or who do you think you are? And that's actually not even really our logic. A lot of that is coming just from fear, which comes from a really ancient part of our brain. And so, you know, that's just there to protect us from failure. But really what it does is it keeps us living this mediocre life where we don't really take any chances. So listening to our intuition is huge. The yearnings of your soul, what is it that really excites you or that you feel pulled or gravitated toward? And for me, it was something so simple, and I like telling people about it because the idea that I could turn this into a profession was really interesting to me, and I never thought I could. So when I think about things I really loved doing, having deep conversations where I would problem solve and encourage someone else were things that if I look back on my life, so much excitement and gratification would come from those times. I would lose track of time. I would come away feeling super amped up and joyful and excited. And if I were to, you know, someone was to ask me, well, what do you love doing? What do you love? You know, how do you lose track of time? That's what I would say. But in my frame of reference, I didn't know how to turn that into, how would I turn that into a vocation? Because being a therapist is a very different way. You're listening to people, yes, you're problem solving and maybe a little bit of encouraging, but therapy is generally about healing wounds from the past and, you know, making for better choices in the future. So coaching has an element of that, but really it's about taking your strengths and amping them up and clearing away stuff that isn't working for you and amping up what does and kind of freeing yourself from all kinds of external expectations about how we're supposed to be and allowing ourselves to be happy. So didn't really know coaching was a real job. So I didn't know it was a real job. And so when I learned about that, when I looked back at all the pieces that came together, like as a high school student, I was a cheerleader. You know, why was I a cheerleader? Because I was really enthusiastic and I was really excited for our team, and it was fun, and it was fun to be part of something positive. You know, things where I was a teacher, I liked helping kids, you know, see their own amazing little gifts, and being around these little positive people was really, really fun. So things in my life where I look back and I think, how was I really effective and how did I have fun? Those are just two little, especially the cheerleading example is a teeny tiny example, but, doing the teaching, I was a substitute teacher at my kid's school for 7 years, and I also did intuitive readings for, gosh, I've been doing that for like 23 years, and the part that I really liked about doing intuitive readings for people was helping them to see the possibilities that were available to them, because when we're sad or when we're frustrated, we can't really see what's right in front of us as an opportunity. And so if I look at those little markers in my life and what I enjoy, it's like, oh gosh, those are the makings of a coach. So you know, we don't always know what jobs are out there. So that's why it's good to talk about it with other people and say, gosh, here's what I love. Can you think of a job that might entail this? And it's interesting what you'll find out.
Yeah. I mean, I can definitely see that in my own life. Cause I had all those little bits and pieces and all the doubts that say, you know, well, you don't have a degree and you can't do this and you can't do that, you know. And then something inside of me just said, go for it, do it.
exactly.
And it's working out well. So in your book, The Little Book of Big Mojo, The Secret Decoder Ring to Unleash Your Superpowers, you give some examples of people with mojo and why you say they have it. So can you give some of those examples to my listeners today?
Sure, of course. Okay, so Jimmy Fallon, I think, has big, huge mojo. Gosh, I love him. He's so great. I love his impressions. I love his ability to bring joy every single time I see him. He brings joy. He's so childlike and funny, but positive. I mean, there's so much positivity that emanates out of him. And what I think is funny about him is, watching him on Saturday Night Live for years, I cannot think of another person on Saturday Night Live that breaks and laughs as much as he does. And technically, that's supposed to be a really bad thing. You know, they're not supposed to break character and laugh in the middle. But we all know that that's one of the funniest parts is when they break character and laugh. And so I just love how he's just so darn cute and adorable and loves what he's doing. And every time I see him, I think, gosh, you know, he is living his dream. He is, you know, singing with Neil Young and dressed up like Neil Young, or, you know, singing with Mick Jagger, or, you know, just dancing with Michelle Obama. Like, how exciting is that for him? So I feel like every time I watch him, it's like he's playing in his own living room. And as a kid, I just love that. Lady Gaga has crazy, amazing mojo. You know, whether you're super excited about her songs or her singing, you really have to hand it to her about how she shows up in the world. She's actually a really vulnerable person. She talks a lot about her own life, about her crazy creative process. She was sexually assaulted as a teenager, and she talks about that. She's not afraid to change her look, change her style. You know, doesn't seem like the smartest career move possibly after being really, really popular in dance music, then to switch up what she was doing and then go on tour with Tony Bennett. Not a career move that you would expect, especially from a girl in her 20s. But how amazing that has actually served her, because, you know, last year she sang the Star Spangled Banner at the Super Bowl, and this year she's a headliner for the Super Bowl show. So I love her vulnerability. I love her guts. I love her brazenness. I think she's incredibly creative. So she's really awesome. Mick Jagger cracks me up If you think about it, and no disrespect meant to Mick Jagger, but if you look at him, you don't think immediately rock star, scrawny guy, not the most traditionally attractive man in the world, not even really a great singer or a great dancer. He, when you watch him move, it's like he's moving to some other song that's not playing right then, which I think is hilarious, you know. And but it works because he believes it. He's got this excitement in his soul about doing this kind of music, and he loves it, and he gets the crowd so revved up and excited. And, you know, not too many people have songs written about them, right? Moves like Jagger. It's just so much fun to watch because so many of the people, and this is one thing I really stress a lot, is so many people with really amazing mojo are not the best in their field technically. So they're not usually, you know, classical music virtuosos or technically perfect actors from Juilliard. Lots of times people that have mojo are just, they really, really believe in themselves, and they sell it because they're in this really cool mode of flow when they're performing. And so, like, another person would be Cher, right? Not traditionally beautiful, especially when she first came out, she was considered ethnic. Her, you know, she had a kind of a bigger nose. Her teeth were kind of crooked. Her voice is unusual, very distinctive. Funny, but like all these things, but she, to me, really epitomizes cool, you know, especially in her days when she was on the Sonny and Cher show in the 70s and in the 80s and, you know, in movies, and how she really just, she didn't even finish high school, and she has an Academy Award and all kinds of, you know, other accolades. So what people love about her is that she's so herself, and she doesn't care what other people think. She's so out there as herself, and again, not the most traditionally amazingly gifted at singing or dancing or maybe even acting. I mean, I think she's a great actress. But I love her songs, but when you think about it, you don't say, ah, yes, that's like a Celine Dion or Barbra Streisand voice, right? So,
right.
So it's fun to see how people that are very, very successful in their field really break the rules. Somebody like Steve Jobs or Bill Gates, neither of them graduated from college. They were really, really, I mean, what you would consider kind of a geek, you know, really, really involved in this creation process. So excited about what they were learning and what they could produce and how they could get it out to people. And they were super passionate about it, but didn't actually even have degrees from prestigious universities, which I think is really cool. And Richard Branson is another one, the head of Virgin. He's in his 60s. He also doesn't have even a high school education. I think he stopped school at about 16. And his passion for his products and his brand really, really take him so far, because he had lots and lots of great instincts about what people would like and how to get products out into the world. I think he's a really good example about how pure passion and street smarts can get you really, really far. So those are some examples of really great mojo.
Now, does finding your mojo ensure that you're going to be happy all the time?
No. Nobody's happy all the time. Anybody who tells you that is lying to you. we're people, not robots, right? We were given
right.
The whole expression of emotions to be able to feel everything, and even the uncomfortable feelings that we have. They're meant to be felt. So it would be really strange if someone in your family died and then you were super happy about it. You know, you may be happy that they're relieved from pain and suffering, but you're going to miss that person, and you're going to experience grief, and that doesn't usually feel good. So, yeah, absolutely. You're still going to have times where you feel badly. The difference is it'll probably be more appropriate to a circumstance rather than a feeling that you're carrying around with you like a black cloud.
Okay, good point.
yeah, I think that's an important – that's a really good question.
Thank you. yeah, because people, you know, people think, oh, I'm so congested. When
you know, when I finally get there, you know, I'm going to be so happy. But getting there is a process of ups and downs. Being there is a process of ups and downs. So even though you know you're in your mojo, it's not always perfect. And I kind of wanted to point that out because a lot of the illustrations of people who have, you know, this, who have found this mojo and who we know, these idols of ours, they just seem like they have it all. But life is not always that easy.
No, and, you know, I'm glad you brought that up because we actually talked about that this weekend in the class I was referencing. We talked, we had videos of Elvis and of Michael Jackson, and we watched them in their prime. And then some people asked, you know, what happened? What happened to them? And what I would say is, you know, at some point along the way, they lost their mojo. And what my interpretation of why that is because, at least for Michael Jackson, like, I've heard, you know, research or, you know, stories from people who knew him that said he never stopped chasing the success that he had in the Thriller album. He was constantly, because he was such a workaholic and always, you know, a consummate showman, he really, really, really wanted to always top himself. And when he had that success, that album was a phenomenon. It wasn't a normal success. It was like this is the most successful album in the history of music. He was constantly trying to top that, and that kind of success is hard to top. And so he was always trying, and it left him feeling that he wasn't enough. You know, we all know about his childhood and that was rough and that his dad was a really harsh, harsh figure. So what I see that as is he couldn't even enjoy really where he was. He had his demons to fight, and he was always searching for what was next when he couldn't just really, really take in the success that he had, you know, and with Elvis, you know, getting into drugs and, you know, dying so young and having so much of his life ahead of him, but never really being able to overcome some of the demons. And I can't imagine what that would be like either, to be that famous and have no anonymity anymore and have people always expecting and wanting things from you. So the mojo that brought them to where they were in terms of success and acceptance is a little different. You know, what happened after was like what can happen to people when they have a lot of fame. So I wouldn't say that they were in the same kind of mojo state, if you will, at the end as they were in the beginning, if that makes sense.
It does. It makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
You know, and the thought that I have is that happiness is really about the journey. It's not about the destination. And so even when we know where we are and what we want to do with our life, if we keep reaching our goals, then we're never going to be happy. If we go from goal to goal to goal, then we're never going to be happy because we're always going to be looking at that next thing. It's really about enjoying the journey of the process of being in it, getting there, those kind of things, which is really hard for people. Why do people have such a hard time with process?
Man, you're right. You are so right, Randy. It is so hard. It's like we can't enjoy what we have as though it's not enough, that where we are right now is not enough. We need to be constantly reaching, seeking, doing something different. And I think part of it is that it's really, really hard for us to feel joy, which I find really interesting. So Brene Brown was the first person I heard say this. And she said, joy is the most terrifying emotion that any of us will feel. And the first time I heard that, I was like, what? And then she said, think about what it feels like right after you have a brand new baby and you're standing over that baby's crib and your heart is like so big. There is so much love in that room looking at that baby. Like, you can't believe you love something so much. And then all these terrible thoughts creep in about what would happen if something happened to this baby? What if it gets sick? What if it gets taken by wolves? What if that, you know, we have to pull in all of this terror because we're so afraid that once we're happy and if we really linger in that someone will take it away, the other shoe will drop. And I found that first of all, I was really relieved to know that I wasn't the only one who had those horrific thoughts, because I thought, my God, what is wrong with me? And now after coaching, you know, hundreds of people over the years, it's like, oh, everyone has those thoughts. Okay, shoo, I feel so much better. But it's so terrifying to feel that kind of joy, because we're so afraid that we'll get kind of comfortable in it and someone will take it away. So I think the key to that is realizing how resilient we really are, because I'm pretty sure if anyone had told us on day one, hey, just so you know, your husband's going to sleep with your best friend, or you're going to go 4 years through college, and at the end you're going to decide you don't really like what you studied, or, you know, your best friend's going to die in an accident. You know, if someone told us that at the very beginning, we would just pack it in, just forget it. Like, I can't even go there, right? But we don't know these things, and so we keep forging ahead because we don't know what's next. But I think when we shut down our hearts because we're terrified of what could be taken from us, that's the saddest thing in the world. I call that Darth, because it's when our heart is really crispy. It's a crispy critter, because we have had so much heartbreak and sadness in our lives that the idea of being open-hearted is just too terrifying, so we shut it down. And then the problem with that is, yeah, you don't really feel as much heartbreak, but you also don't feel any joy, because you've numbed yourself being able to really feel much at all.
That's true. I definitely agree with you. I definitely agree with you. So we've talked about a lot of things. Is there anything that, you know, maybe you think is important that maybe we haven't touched on yet?
Yeah. I think what's really a really interesting fact that lots of people are super interested in is that your mojo can actually – one marker of mojo can be, what have you been mocked for or made fun of for? And that actually can be a marker of mojo, who would think? So I'll give you an example of myself. So all my life I was told, Keisha, you're too sensitive. You need to get some thicker skin. You worry too much about other people. You're just like this, you know, bleeding heart just walking around in the world. And I was like, gosh, you know, well, that's kind of true. I am pretty sensitive. You mean there's an alternative? You know, first of all, you don't know what you don't know, because you're used to being you. And so I would try to get the thicker skin and not let things bother me. And it actually turned out to be really impossible for me. I tried. And what I later realized was my sensitivity is a gift, and it helps me to be very intuitive. So as this very empathic person, this is what's actually led me to be a really good intuitive reader. It helps me be a really good coach for people. So what is, in one way, you know, something that people have made fun of me for, you know, I was this kid that used to like cry when I would watch the news. Gosh, I still do. I'm sure a lot of people do. but, you know, just always thinking about, you know, someone else who's less fortunate or is suffering, like my heart goes right to them, and thinking, gosh, you know, that's something I need to stop doing. And really what I've realized is, not really, for me, that's just a natural way of being. And one of the things that people say they like most about me, and if I didn't have those feelings, I don't think I would be me. So, you know, the sensitivity piece is a gift. It's something to manage. It's not always easy, but it's who I am. And so I've been mocked and made fun of about that my whole life. And now it turned out to be something that actually I can really work with. So when I ask people, you know, what's something that you've been made fun of for? You know, if I joke around, I mean, I've made fun of my own husband. He's in the military. He's a pilot. He's very left brain and very organized. And I make fun of him all the time for his files and his subfiles and his, you know, crazy organization. But that really suited him for the kind of work that he's done. So, you know, even though we might make fun of, oh my gosh, here he comes with the organization again, it's sort of in a lighthearted, loving way, not in a, oh my gosh, what is wrong with you sort of way. And now he does financial coaching for people. And all that organization really does pay off. It's something he enjoys, and it makes him feel good. So,
yeah, and it's actually a really good balance for your personality, because I have the same situation. I'm real, you know, empathic and real sensitive, and my husband is real left brain. And so, and his files have files have files have files. I mean, he needs receipts. He keeps records. Every time I fill up my gas tank, I have to write how many miles I went on the receipt. He keeps records of everything, but same person, right? So, but you know, when it comes down to it, when we really need to know information, he's got that information, and I really appreciate it, because I would never ever take the time to do these things, but somebody needs to. So makes for a really good business person.
It really does, and it's really actually helpful, even though it gets on your nerves, you know, sometimes.
Right.
It's like, okay, and being able to appreciate that about your partner is a really great thing. I love that example. That's so funny.
Yeah. He's so funny. He's so funny, Annette. We own a business. We own a Massage Envy here in South Florida, and everybody laughs at him because he's just so darn organized.
And that works for him.
It does. It does, and it is what makes him successful. So, so your book, Little Book of Big Mojo. When people read this, what would you like them to come away with?
A lot of things. Boy, that was a tall order too, because I thought, my gosh, if I'm going to name this book this, I really better follow through. I want them to feel acceptance of themselves and realize, you know, even though the examples that I'm giving are of rock stars, and it's hard for us to sometimes put ourselves into the spot of, okay, well, yeah, but they're rock stars, they're millionaires, they have everything, right? And so I have examples of people with mojo in the book who are everyday people. Like, one silly example is, I was at a restaurant and I saw a busboy that was working so hard and so meticulously on, you would think that he owned this restaurant and that the president was coming to dine. That's the kind of fervor he was, you know, making those tables so clean and clearing everything away, and so much determination and ownership over his work. And I thought, my gosh, that guy's got crazy good mojo. And what I think people don't, I know, he's a busboy, but he was doing his job. Like, this is my restaurant. I need it to be clean and welcoming and excellent for whoever steps in. Like, this is my domain. And I loved that he was doing that, because think about if everyone did their job that way. Wouldn't that be amazing?
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh.
I know. I mean, if you have a job, you may as well do it really, really well. Own it. Don't be ashamed of it.
You know,
something
I discovered when I went to Atlanta, Georgia, and I was absolutely amazed. That must be the city of mojo, because everybody is happy with their job, and they show it, from the coat check person to the busboy to the cab driver to the bus driver. Every single person that I came across in Atlanta, Georgia, was happy and had respect for themselves over the jobs that they did. So I don't know how, maybe we got to find out where Atlanta gets so much mojo.
I know. What's in the water? What's in the water in Atlanta? Oh, that's so funny. No, it's true. And, you know, it is about that self-respect. And one of the things I say in the book is, you know, if you're in a job that you don't like, because that's a lot of what I do, is helping people transition from one career to another. And there's a lot of fear, you know, attached to that. And when we talk about it, there's always, you know, like I said, fear, apprehension, doubt that someone will be able to be successful in another field. And I'm always talking with people about, you know, this is possible. You're not just pigeonholed into one way of doing things. I mean, now people are doing 5 to 7 careers over their lifetime. And people, when they hear that, they're like, really? Oh my gosh, you know, I'm 6 careers behind. You know, if you've worked in the same career your whole life, you're really an anomaly now. Things are not the same, and our economy is evolving. It's become micro-entrepreneurship economy. It's moving more and more towards that. people are working for themselves because the big structures are not withstanding the way that things are changing. So, you know, there was no Etsy, there was no eBay, there was no, coaching businesses are really huge, and all kinds of coaching. So people are becoming entrepreneurs for lots and lots of reasons, and there's so many ways that we can all make a living, and we can do some of those things simultaneously. You know, who says you can't own a massage envy and coach people and have a radio show, right?
Right.
I mean, and if you had designed that in your head maybe, you know, 30 years ago, you would have been like, what? People don't do that. You either do one or the other. And that's not true anymore, don't you think?
I have 4 simultaneous careers. I do so many things. When people say, what do you do? I'm like, they're like, oh, I'm exhausted. But it doesn't exhaust. And I happen to be someone with low energy. So I take it in my stride. I do this when I do this and that when I do that. And I just manage to do it all. And I never thought I would be able to do even one of those things. So true. It's absolutely true. I agree with you.
But don't you think, too, that it's probably because you're in your zone, right? You could give up any of those 4 jobs if you didn't like it and if it didn't give you energy rather than depleting you. You could give one of those up, right, and amp up something else. But for you, since you're enjoying all of them, it probably gives you a lot of energy that you wouldn't have if you were in one job that really depleted you.
It does. It's all the aspects of who I am. It's the business person. It's the counselor. It's the author. It's the interviewer. It's all the different aspects of who I am, and I'm in different, you know, I've got my hands in different things. But anyway, well, we're running low on time. But I want to, again, tell my listeners, so we're talking to Keisha Galagos, and her book is The Little Book of Big Mojo, The Secret Decoder Ring to Unleash Your Superpowers. Keisha, how do we get your book?
You can get my book on Amazon. You can get my book on Nook or at iBooks.
Okay. Excellent, excellent.
Yeah.
And your website is KeishaGalagos.com. And I have it right up
or
on your show page here with
Whisper.
A link. Huh?
Yeah, or Mojo Whisper. If you can't spell my name, just put MojoWhisper.com and you'll find me.
Perfect, perfect. Well, thank you. This was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you.
So have a wonderful day. I've got to close the show, but go on and show your mojo to the world. And I'll do the same.
Thank you. Thanks, Randy. Have a great day.
Take care.
Okay,
you too.
Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye. So we are out of time for today, but if you have any comments or questions about today's show, you can email me at loveyourlife@randygfine.com, RANDIGFINE.com. Thanks again for tuning in and listening to A Fine Time for Healing. I am your talk radio show host, author, owner of Massage Envy, writer, jewelry designer. Oh, my gosh, I do so many things. Signing off until next time. May joy and serenity always be yours. Goodbye.
We hope you enjoyed today's programming. To learn more about Randy Fine, read her articles, or to make a counseling appointment with her, please visit randygfine.com. That's RANDIGFINE.com. Or visit her on Facebook at Randy G. Fine.